And if you're inside that safe proximity, there's a problem, okay? And you're either bound to be there because you have a mission to do something or a fueling mission, whatever it would be, or you don't belong there, in which case you then bring in the Space Force or you bring in other organizations to say, hey, this is not correct.
Hey, Space Watchers, and welcome. This is Space Cafe Radio, your radio channel dedicated to emerging trends and live conferences in the space sector, and this is a special episode. I am Thorsten Krinning, publisher at spacewatch.global. PSSI, the Prague Security Studies Institute, has the pleasure to present Space Cafe Radio, PSSI Space Security Miniseries, a radio series focused on Allied preparedness to face the rapidly changing space domain. PSSI is a non-profit, non-government public policy organization founded in 2002 and based in Prague. In space, PSSI puts emphasis on emerging threats and available policy solutions. All the interviews in the PSSI Space Security miniseries were conducted during the 6th PSSI Space Security Conference held in Prague at the Channing Palace, the headquarters of the Czech Ministry of Foreign Affairs, from the 19th to the 21st of June 2022. The conference is part of the PSSI's well-established series of high-level trilateral space security conferences, where for trilateral we mean Europe, US and Japan. The conference series, launched in 2011, is designed to advance decision-making within the security domain among allies. They represent one of the highest level of unclassified gathering of military allies, national security experts, and senior industry representatives. My guest on this final episode is Kevin O'Connell, former director of the Office of Space Commerce at the U.S. Department of Commerce, and founder and CEO of Space Economy Rising LLC. We spoke about regulations versus visual thinking, how to craft database regulations to protect space assets. What are the current threats you see in the space domain?
Well, obviously, we're at a point in time where there's considerable peril from Russian aggression in Ukraine, and we've already seen examples of Russian aggression in space with last November's anti-satellite test. And that just shows a disregard for the space environment that we really need to worry about. We've also seen parallel developments on the part of the Chinese with a grappling capability that we need to worry about. They claim it's for peaceful purposes, but we're not quite sure about that. Those are among the harder threats that we need to worry about. Obviously, I think you know this, Thorsten, in my work, we spent a lot of time on space safety and sustainability. And obviously, the space debris issue is something that threatens the lives of astronauts on board the ISS. It threatens the billions of dollars of investment that's already been made by us and our allies. And it actually threatens the growth in the space economy. So I think that's a really important issue that we need to continue to work.
The obvious question is now, how does the U.S. respond to the threats?
So I think there's a handful of ways to do that. Number one, we've brought together a coalition of allies and like-minded countries. We've been very vocal in our criticism of that. Obviously, the vice president has announced a ban on anti-satellite testing, ground-based anti-satellite testing there from the United States. That's been followed by the Canadians. And so it's a first move to demonstrate our commitment to this issue and how important it is to us. There will be other issues as well. We need to continue to work in international forums, to work with our allies, and to make sure we keep considerable pressure on the Russians and other bad actors in space.
Aren't the actions taken right now overdue? You mentioned the anti-satellite test banned, ground-based. As you said, the Outer Space Institute is pushing for that for quite a while, and we had Mike Byers in our program. But it sounds like a drop of water on a hot stone at the moment. So we have so many issues, and it's so small. We have the open-ended working group now on norms of behaviors, what is also great, but is that enough or do we need more?
We need more, obviously. There's no time like now for the decisions announced by the administration on the anti-satellite testing. Need more work. One of my worries and my background on this focused mostly on the private sector. One of my concerns about this is that private sector will make progress on some of these things we call rules of the road faster than we can actually make progress at the international level. Now, there's a bold proposal by the UK at the United Nations in the First Committee to essentially make progress on this. I think we heard here that there's some positive reaction to that from across the international community. That world just moves. It's very important, but that world just moves at a very slow pace by necessity. And in this area particularly, we're moving at lightning speed from a technical perspective, from the number of new capabilities that are coming into the market. So we have to find a way to reconcile those two processes. We often look for historical parallels, and I think as has been discussed here in Prague, the maritime example is probably the more pertinent example, where industry helped create rules of the road, practical rules of the road, that were ultimately codified by governments. And so I think we're probably at that place in time. Need we do more? Absolutely.
How do you see the role of the allies in that, and how can they be part in N/your architecture?
So I spoke about the architecture issue, and I think we're living in a world now, by nature, military organizations, including our Space Force, we've had the benefit of having a number of Space Command commanders, Allied Space Command commanders here, and we have to do the planning for different scenarios. But I think the world we're living in and the speed at which it's changing means that we also have to be ready to put an architecture of the willing, if you will, put together something as developments demand that we do. That's not always the ideal way to do it, but we may be prompted to do that by real-world developments, in particular from our adversaries.
I had a Space Cafe Radio with Jim Bridenstine, and he came up with the same direction, saying, hey, Artemis Accords, SCM, that's our way to move forward. We have to do something. We can't wait for the UN or alike organizations. They have to follow at one stage, and that sounds like very familiar with what you said. Can we focus on the role of the commercial in that scenario? Because as you said, they are driving it. What might be the future hold up for us? Seeing the role of the commercials, will they take over space completely?
No, people will sometimes say that commercial is the only path forward. That's not correct. There's a role for governments, obviously. There's a role for commercial entities. We've had in the United States, we've had a line of past administrations that has increasingly focused on the benefits from commercial activities, not just for commercial activities per se, but also because they're a faster way to provide support to our national security. The national security legacy of space in the United States, and it's different from Europe. Very much the case that we want to be able to leverage those commercial capabilities. What's different about commercial companies? There's an ability to anticipate future requirements. There's an ability to innovate. And we have to continue to include, we have to include the role of private finance here, especially in the United States. The extent to which we've been able to see companies go into the government, get a small technical validation or interest in a concept, and then being able to turn out to the private finance industry, which is a much more savvy industry today than it was 20 years ago. And they will basically say, look, you may be a government contractor for the next 20 years, and that may be a great business, and congratulations, and you probably won't get much private finance. All the way up to, we see you being able to provide ultimately a full commercial company, a commercial set of services, and we'll give you some amount of money that grows. And that's been a powerful combination in accelerating. If you've seen my congressional testimony, I've talked about the space economy accelerating and diversifying. And we'll see how the global economy changes right now will affect that. But we still see tremendous investment across a wide range of functions for space that will not only help with the economy and create brand new services for us here on Earth, they'll also support and bolster our national security.
When Peter Marquez was on stage, he talked about the budget without mentioning the budget that AWS puts up for their space activities. And the striking point was when he said the budget we put into space activities is bigger than most countries' space budget. What is this great power comes great responsibility? Coming back to the rules of the road, who should set that? Because that is definitely not something for the private companies.
So let's look at what's going on in the space environment. And the debris problem continues to be the most pressing of problems. The space safety issue is at the top of the list that needs to be dealt with. The good news on that, by the way, is sometimes people think that's the end of the story if we're able to provide much more precise knowledge of where things are in space, to do better modeling of how they behave in space, and to provide much more precise warnings to space operators. But the harsh reality is we're still dealing with roughly 60-odd percent of the debris in space is debris. It's not maneuverable. You have very limited freedom of action. And so it's only things that can maneuver where you have to get to make some progress. In terms of the rules of the road, again, I think there's a level of discussion in industry. Yesterday, I was citing Confers, the organization in the United States. where industry is meeting together in anticipation of a new market segment in the satellite servicing arena. And those conversations continue about how do we think about notifications? How do we think about distance? I've often pointed to the fact that when we think about security in space, historically, there's been a concern about, I'll call it cat and mouse games that have gone on between adversaries. Okay. The reality is we're about to see the next wave of innovation in space will come from satellite servicing, which will necessarily involve things moving up next to things. Okay? So we're going to have to reconcile that from both a security perspective, and that will come down to notifications, who's doing what, how much information is made available, maybe even publicly at some level, as to what is about to take place. And then have an ability to determine if somebody doesn't do what they say they're going to do. In other words, I'm naive enough to think that it's all going to be good news, but how will we then determine what's going on in a normal way, if you will, as opposed to benign way. And so that's why we need, as discussed yesterday, that's why we need a space domain awareness capability. Remember, the way I've always thought about this is that the space safety layer, which we have strongly argued needs to be on the civil side for lots of good reasons. It's the base layer. Everybody in space benefits from safety, okay? National security organizations, civil weather programs, et cetera. The space domain awareness capabilities that will be on top of that will really be the more exotic capabilities to pay attention to very specific space activities that are of potential cause for harm and things like that. And so that's the way I see it laying down.
I think it comes down to, and you mentioned it before, behaviors in space.
Yes.
But as a German, I want to have measured numbers. I want to know what is close and when is it too close. And this question was brought up here and there was not a clear answer. So that means, when do you react for what? And how do you react? We see it in UNIDIR in the discussion on cyber, on hypersonic, and whatever it is.
Right.
There are no answers. What is frightening? We have all these tools. I don't call them weapons, but we have these tools and they're not unregulated, but there are no consequences. If I'm coming with my satellite intentionally or unintentionally too close and you feel not good.
But I think that's a place there where industry, again, assuming that we won't be able to strike an agreement on that at the international level in the short term, I think that's a place where industry can drive a standard for what is a safe proximity. And if you're inside that safe proximity, there's a problem, okay? And you're either bound to be there because you have a mission to do something or a fueling mission, whatever it would be, or you don't belong there, in which case you then bring in the Space Force, so you bring in other organizations to say, hey, this is not correct. It still could be an accident, but that's where you need to determine whether it's a benign activity or a hostile activity. And then action and compliance need to take hold. I get your point about the distance. The question is, that's probably not one that's that difficult. We just need to agree upon something that we think is a safe passageway for people that are coming close to others. But I understand your desire for that. We can talk about regulation. We've just been through a session in here on regulation. And I always worry because I hear more and more people talking about regulation. And the thing I've asked is, please, we need data-driven regulation. And wishful thinking is not the good basis for regulation. Well-intended people are not the best way to craft regulation. Because I actually think you can do much more harm if you craft a regulation that has no basis in data. In the private sector, I've spoken here about the space insurance industry and things like that. So there are tools in our toolkit to use to help with this. And I think there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that we can actually use to do this.
I agree. I totally agree. The question or the discussion about regulation is as old as businesses. Yeah,
exactly. It's not unique to space.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But it comes in cycles back. Yeah, whenever there's a new domain we encounter for us. Coming back to the SSA STM area, how do you foresee a global SSA STM system can work?
So the very first step, people will often ask me, why did you spend so much time on SSA while you were at Commerce? There are four ways that we know that we can actually improve the situation. The first and the cheapest is not creating new debris as we go up. There's some interesting technology areas that are being worked on. That's one issue.
Can you stay with that for a second?
Absolutely.
Because ESA is coming up with zero debris policy. Everything that goes up has to come down in a certain time frame. What is in theory not new, because you're bound to deorbit your spacecraft within 25 years.
Right.
So at least after the adaptation of the long-term sustainability guidelines.
Right.
How can we enforce it? How can we push that?
The problem we have is compliance, is how do we get people to comply with this? We think that space operators, recognizing that they may cause more of this problem, are starting to think about reduced lifetimes, bringing satellites in well within the 25-year guidelines, et cetera. How are we still going to enforce the people that don't do that? That's still an open question. And that's something that's probably going to have to be dealt with at the government level.
You say
governments.
It's interesting that you say deliberately governments, not the UN level.
Or at the UN level as well, sure. I'm not distinguishing on that point.
Okay.
Let me keep going, by the way, on the SSA thing, because when you think about the list of things, one is not creating new debris, then improved SSA, what we call space traffic management or space traffic control, and pick your favorite term on that, and then active debris removal lies out there at the outer edge. The last two cannot be done without much more effective SSA, without understanding much more precisely where things are, understanding how they behave, and being able to provide operators some level of confidence in a warning when they get it. We know that after the Russian ASAT test, there have been these squalls or storms of conjunctions that operators are receiving. I have a background in intelligence analysis from when I was much younger. And one of the things is that people who are warned constantly typically do nothing. And that's probably not the right solution. So we want to move from a world in which people are getting continuous warnings on a daily basis to where they get a handful or one or two warnings that basically say, this is deadly serious. You really start to take action, communicate with the other party that you might have a conjunction with, et cetera. I think that's the first task we have to deal with. And obviously a number of innovative commercial companies funded by private finance are coming into the market to do this. They're greatly diverse in many ways. And so we want government to actually use this time to fund those companies at some level and actually learn what is coming out of the private sector.
Do we have the data today to make really just precise warning? The amount of warnings is just a result of the imprecise data that we have in vast majority today.
So I think it's not just the data problem. I think it's also how do you refine the analysis?
Okay.
It's interesting because I grew up in the remote sensing world, and I remember times when people would show up and say, hey, here's a bunch of pixels, Kevin, and the farmer is going to buy a number of pixels. And you'd say, have you ever met a farmer? No. Okay. But where we are today is that's one of the fastest growing market segments in the space economy. Because they focused on specific verticals, and in particular to this question, they actually added artificial intelligence, data management techniques. We are really missing an opportunity if we don't draw upon commercial companies that themselves can draw upon literally trillions of dollars of investment in things like data management, data storage, analytics, visualization. And Peter made a comment yesterday and he said space is not special and a number of people recoiled in their chairs. What that's really saying is we can leverage all of those technologies that are used in a dozen other fields to help with this problem very quickly. So it's not just the data, although what's interesting is when you look at the ecosystem of companies that is coming into the market, they're actually going to bring very diverse data sets. You have the ground-based systems that are going to be followed by the space-based systems, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think there's a tremendous opportunity here. I don't yet see the investment in this area by governments that is consistent with either the value of space or the risk in space.
My question is to pick up your foresight view. Will we ever have space as a secure and sustainable domain? Will we see it again, or is that over?
No, I think we will see it. I'm an optimist here, and the extent to which I think people sometimes overthink what this is really all about. Mm-hmm. At some level, space traffic management is about allowing operators to communicate with other operators. There will not be a need for governments to be involved other than standards.
Okay.
Just like when we're driving on the street, the government is not involved in the fact that when I drive up to a stop sign, I either stop or I don't. They can get involved if I don't stop, yeah. But I think this is really about people being able to communicate with one another about the threats in space, the natural ones and the debris-related ones, et cetera. Things like ASAT tests, and that's a different problem. Space has so much economic potential here to create services both here on Earth and to expand our knowledge about the solar system and to create an entire lunar economy. We're in 2022, and we think this is the year of the lunar economy. 100 missions are going to go to the moon in the next decade, and the extent to which somebody is going to succeed there, and hopefully 99 to 100 of them are going to succeed. And so that's going to open up a whole new path for us One of the things I've looked at in my own work is the extent to which there are spinoffs, and the best ones that I use are in space medicine. People will sometimes say to me, hey, Kevin, what are you talking about? Five doctors that care about space. And the answer is there are 70 organizations worldwide that are focused on space medicine, trying to improve the lot of astronauts as we go to the moon and then we go to Mars. But even beyond that, what you realize is the intensity of that work on space medicine is going to do a heck of a lot for us understanding how to improve these aging bodies here on Earth. There's a good example already. I know of a group that's working on a vaccine to help improve the bone density and the bone structure for astronauts when they're in space, because it's tough when they come back. We have a aging population in many countries that often suffers hip fractures and things like that. Potentially, I'm not the scientist on this one, but potentially that's absolutely going to be a spinoff we're going to see. And I think there are probably 1,000 others that we don't even understand yet.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this final episode of the Space Cafe Radio PSSI Space Security Miniseries, sponsored by PSSI, the Prague Security Studies Institute. PSSI is the organizer of the 6th Space Security Conference in Prague, which is part of the high-level trilateral Space Security Conference series launched in 2011. As mentioned, that is the last episode of the mini-series, but there are many other conversations to discover in the Space Cafe Radio or Space Cafe podcast formats on our website or on all major podcast platforms. Please leave us your rating when you like what you hear. And if you want to stay on the pulse of the space industry, please visit our website at www.spacewatch.global and subscribe to our newsletters. And of course, don't forget to become a Space Watcher. I'm Thorsten Greening, publisher at spacewatch.global, your independent perspective on space.